Everyone who has read Louisa May Alcott's classic Little Women has wondered how the March family of the novel compared to the Alcott family. Madeline Bedell, who is interested in fiction written by and about women, has completed the first book in a 2-volume biography of the Alcott family. In discussing the family, her book deals also with the social reform movements of the late 19th century in New England, including feminism, utopian socialism, progressive education, and transcendentalism. Author Marilyn Bedell is my guest, and her new book is called The Alcotts, a Biography of a Family. It's published by Clarkson Potter. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Tell us why you were interested in the Alcott family.
Well, I really think it was because of a childhood passion for Little Women. I think there's always some one book that really grabs us when we are our children, and with me it was Little Women. There were others. There was David Copperfield and Jane Austen. But it was that book, and it remained with me all my life. I think it's because of these are 4 archetypes of women, and so that we can identify with one or the other of them. And then also there is the fact that the family life in it, there is something so entrancing about it. In my book, The Alcotts, I call it a charmed circle. And I wanted to know what that charmed circle was like. I had heard a little bit about the Alcotts. I, of course, knew that Louisa May Alcott was the model for Joe, that the author was Joe March. I think anybody who has read that realizes that the author is Joe, because Louisa May Alcott was a very autobiographical writer, more so than most. And I knew that the father was a famous philosopher and educator, and I found out that he was a half-mad genius. I didn't know much about the mother. I didn't know much about the mother, but I knew that the family was, I don't know, there's something about it. It's a very American family, something that even though we don't know anything about it, we feel we can relate to it. And that's what started me on it. Families have always interested me anyway.
This sounds like a pretty special family, a pretty radical family in a lot of ways. So I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the movements they were involved in that also tell the story of the time that they lived in New England. Now, I know that the period that you're writing about, of the Alcott family, there was a movement of communalism.
Was just one of the many movements. This period in this book is what we call the antebellum period, which is before the Civil War, and then after the Civil War is called the postbellum period. But to me, it's a fascinating period because it is the period when our national identity was being formed and when a national ideology, and this is the liberal ideology, I believe, and it was these Alcotts who, along with others, Emerson, Thoreau, all these people, were at the heart, at the very root of this national ideology and of these movements. Now, one of the movements was, it wasn't communalism, it was communism, but it was communism with a small c, and it was utopian communism or utopian socialism. And the Alcotts founded Bronson Alcott, Louisa's fantastic father, founded a socialist, utopian socialist commune, along with a most mysterious and malevolent but fascinating English follower named Charles Lane. And their commune was called Fruitlands. It was in Harvard, Massachusetts. The 4 little women lived there, along with their mother and father, and a motley crew of, if you think that there were eccentrics and hippies and so forth in the 1960s and 1970s, believe me, they paled beside the people at Fruitlands. There was an atomist. His name was Samuel Bowers. An atomist means a nudist. The people at Fruitlands made him wear a sheet around him when he went out, and there were, the wildest kind of vegetarians. This was one of, I think there was something about at least 150 utopian communes in the United States at that time, and very few of them have lasted. The only ones that have lasted, to my knowledge, are those that were religious. The Shakers have continued, and there's some out west that were religious. But they fell apart. They all fell apart, but none fell apart more dramatically than Fruitlands, Bronson Alcott's Fruitlands.
What was the nature of the falling apart?
Well, it was a battle of a triangle of passions. It was a three-way battle between Abby Alcott, Louisa May's marvelous, independent, fierce, feminist mother, and Charles Lane for the soul of Bronson Alcott. And I can't tell you all of the details, but this battle between these three people went on in the dead of winter at about, that's why I say none fell apart more dramatically than Fruitlands, at about 20 degrees below zero with not much to eat and no fuel left. And this was the crisis in the Alcott family lives. And after that, it's very interesting. Bronson Alcott stated that you had to change society by being in society. You couldn't change it by withdrawing from society. And isn't this the same kind of philosophical struggle and things that people are questioning today, whether to withdraw from society or to get right in there and fight it out?
Since you've already made the comparison, let me continue at a moment. Some of the communes of the late 60s and early 70s were very involved with trying to redefine the family structure and broaden it so that family included friends as well as relatives, and that there was a more communal way of bringing up the children and of relating to one another, and sometimes that applied to sexual relationships as well. Was the family broadened in that regard?
Yes, they called it the consociate family was the marvelous name that the Alcotts used, and that stood for everybody in the commune. There were, I think there were about 12 people at one time in this too small place. I've visited it often, and I've often asked myself, just where did everybody sleep? They did not, there were very few women in this commune. In fact, at one time, the only adult woman in this commune was Abby May Alcott, and she had to do all the work. And believe me, that was one of the things that this commune fell apart on. You know, I have heard people who studied communes today, and they said that they have found none today where the work is not divided to some extent, at least, along man's work and woman's work. I think we all know that commune, successful agriculturally, at least out in Tennessee, called the farm. But that one, certainly, the women do all the housework. Well, in this one, the women did all the housework, but just remember I said there was one woman and her four little daughters. So in my book, The Alcotts, I have really tried to examine what were the dynamics that made this fall apart. And this certainly was one of them, was the burden that was put upon women in this commune, and particularly on this on Abby Alcott in this commune, because as Louisa wrote a wonderful, wonderful essay about it. It's available. It can be, I think it's in print today, and it's called Transcendental Wild Oats, and it is a howling satire of this commune.
One of the questions everybody wanted answered, particularly 10 years ago when there were a lot of people living in communes, is how are the children going to grow up, and how is this experience going to affect them, and what they want from their own family, and what kind of personality they develop. What was the answer to that in Louisa May Alcott?
First of all, this was very short-lived. This only lasted 9 months. It didn't even last a year. So as far as the type of life they led, it did not, I don't think it affected them. We can't draw conclusions from that. Besides, they were supposed to be communally raised. The big problem in Fruitlands was the battle between the individual Alcott family, ostensibly headed by Bronson Alcott, but really headed by Abby Alcott, the interests of that family versus the interests, the philosophical, let us say, interests of Charles Lane and Bronson Alcott. And when the Alcotts finally broke up, Charles Lane was always accusing Abby Alcott of being too interested in her own family. And he said she has not yet that spiritual attitude, you know, which would allow her to be interested in the wider family. Well, of course, she wasn't. She was a very practical, very shrewd, and very intelligent person. The little girls, really, they were given lessons, the poor things in a way, as Louisa said, the poor things, because they were given lessons both by their extremely vocal, rhetorical father and Charles Lane, who did Bronson Alcott bettered Bronson Alcott at being Bronson Alcott. And Louisa has a wonderful thing as saying, after learning all these lessons and then after discussing philosophical things such as what makes a man and so forth and so so she wrote down and said, and so to bed very tired. So the little girls did not like the communal upbringing. They were very, very happy when it broke up.
Okay. No. So what was the marital relationship like between Bronson and Abby? You've hinted at that a little bit. Yeah. I guess she did most of the housework and child rearing.
Well, no, that isn't really true. There are different phases. There are different phases in the Alcott marriage. That's why it's kind of a classical, universal marriage, and you can study it at this point, and then you can study it in their middle age, and then you can study it when she was doing all the work and he was off philosophizing, and then lo and behold, there's another point where he's doing all the work, and there's a point where she's out working. So anybody who said, when you say, what was the marriage like? The marriage was just like all marriages, all put together into one. And there was a time at the very beginning when he was really America's first child psychologist. He hasn't been given credit for this. When he decided that he was going to do record the lives of his first two children. It was Louisa and Anna, and this is Bronson Alcott. And he would produce the first history of a human infant. And then they would carry it on, and thus we would have the first history of a human being, and this came true. But in order for him to do this, he took over power. There's a chapter I have called Power Struggle in the Nursery. And he took over power, and he raised the children, and sometimes just recorded, and other times manipulated them. He used behaviorist techniques, which were striking in their modernity, and not wholly admirable, I don't think. He was very manipulative. He was an extraordinary man. So the marriage was stormy. It was loving. It was hating. I think it was a marvelous marriage when all is said and done.
You've called Abby Alcott, the mother in the family, a feminist.
Oh, yes.
What were some of her feminist activities?
Well, at one point, she had been an upper-class girl, and she really didn't have any skills. But the family was so poor that she finally went out and got a job. Very unusual for a woman of her age in her time, and a non-professional job. And she was hired as a visiting missionary to the poor by the Ladies Friendly Society of the South Congregational Church. Well, I don't think they quite, and they paid her. She was really Boston's first professional woman social worker. I don't think they knew what they were getting in for, because she just ate this up. It was if she had been waiting all of her life for something like this. She happened to get the job in the middle of the most convulsive period in Boston and in other cities too, which was at the height of the Industrial Revolution and the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and the wave of emigration into Boston. And she wasn't content with going around giving baskets to the poor. Oh, no. She wanted to analyze the causes of poverty, and she produced brilliant reports, brilliant, on the causes of poverty, which she said, well, that's why they didn't like her. She said it was due to the cruel tyranny of the capitalist beast. But you see, this turned her into a feminist, really. She had been a sort of a feminist, but she was working mostly with women, and she saw these Irish women, how badly they were treated, how badly they were paid, how overworked they were, how they were exploited. Many of them, the young girls, were literally grabbed by so-called employment agencies and brought to houses of prostitution. And this made her into both a social and political radical and a feminist at the same time. And she then joined the feminist movement. There was a very strong early feminist movement, the roots from which we all come. All the women's movements were at that time. 1848 was the year, Seneca Falls. And she headed up a petition for woman suffrage, which she presented before the Massachusetts States Convention, and was very active in the movement. And, of course, her daughter followed her.
Louisa May Alcott, would you call her a feminist? Well, let me think back a minute to Little Women. I'm trying to.
Yeah.
I read it a long time ago, but I'm trying to think of the activism of her mother, and the really domineering character of her father mm-hmm. are portrayed like you're describing them in the novel Little Women. Mm-hmm. I don't recall.
No, they're not. No, they're not. They're the mother and father. Well, the father's hardly in the novel. I mean, just forget the Reverend March. He's nice, but he's not Bronson Alcott. And the mother is Marmee, who is, no, she's not a social activist, although she's going to a job, but that's very, you don't understand exactly what it is. She's more of a symbol in Little Women, but she is a symbol, a matriarchal symbol. She's not socially active, that's true. But she is a powerful, she is the first and one of the few female authoritarian figures. This is domestic feminism, personal feminism, that is apparent in that book. Louisa herself was, I think that's why this book is such a classic and why we find it so intriguing to us, because she was a public feminist, Louisa. She also headed up the next battle for women's suffrage, and she was a contributor to the Woman's Journal, the leading feminist journal of the time. And she was also, from the time she was a girl, she was active in the women's movement. But personally, she was always torn between the ideas of femininity and womanhood, and you're supposed to be domestic, you know, we all know those, and the family and wanting a husband and being sweet and feminine, and the other, the raging, independent, would-be writer, the rebel. And, of course, the four girls in Little Women, as were the four Alcott sisters, personify this struggle. And for me, I find this book, it's not rhetorical, Little Women, about feminism. What it does is it makes women and women's struggles important. And that's what I think is important. And that's what the Alcotts were, too. They're a very female family.
For a writer as biographical as Louisa May Alcott was, why do you think she gave the father in the family such a small role, considering that in her own life she had a much
He was all-powerful and all-encompassing. I think that's the reason she did. In the Alcott family, in the Alcotts, he was always a powerful figure, although his wife gradually wrested the power from him. But nevertheless, he was a dominating and powerful person in his children's lives. I think she took him out of the book precisely for that reason. Little Women it can be viewed on many, many levels, and one of the ways that modern critics are beginning to look at it is to call it a lesbian novel. Now, not lesbian in the sexual sense, but lesbian in the social sense, that it is an all-female family, that it is the female relationships that count, and that is this bonding of sisters that with a matriarch at the head of it. Now, in order to do that, she had to push the father out, and by pushing the father out, she eliminated the strife, the struggle, the riveting sexual tensions that characterized the Alcott family and that characterized not only the father's relationship with the mother, but Louisa Alcott's own relationship with her father, Bronson Alcott.